Welcome into the Rundown, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Chase McCabe, Ryan Porth here with you on a Thursday, the first time that we've been together in I don't know how long. It's been a few weeks for sure. Ryan, how you doing?
Is this the first time where we've been together since the start of COVID? It feels like it.
No,
it feels like it's
been
a long time.
It hasn't been that long.
I know. I'm just making a joke there, Chase.
I know. Yeah. Well, good to have you, or good to be with you. I guess you've been back all this week. But obviously a lot to get into today. And, you know, people keep telling me that this is a big deal. Like, no, duh, it's a big deal. I know this is a big deal because I've been the one saying since the offseason began, pay Derrick Henry. And guess what? The Titans finally listened to me. And I thought I was going to be wrong. For 2 days, I thought I was wrong.
Everybody thought you were wrong.
I was upset. I was like, why are they doing this? I know Joe Rexroad wrote a – I'm fired up. Just be ready. I know Joe Rexroad wrote an article about it, of this is what they should have done in The Athletic. But at the 11th hour, which we have seen before, Adam Schefter got proven wrong. And Adam Schefter is rarely wrong. But I was glad yesterday to see that Adam Schefter was wrong, because he did, you know, he then came out and said, well, not so fast. It looks like that the Titans and Derrick Henry are approaching a long-term deal, and they did, in fact, get that done. It came out just after the deadline. We started to get the details of what it was, and it was cool listening to Jared and Joe Rexroad yesterday, as Joe's doing his job as a reporter, as a journalist, and saying sources have confirmed that Derrick Henry has signed this deal. So it was neat to listen to it all unfold, and I know Jared was excited about that. But
yes, he was.
You know, it's I'm glad they got it done. It's good for the franchise. As Darren and I have debated the last couple of days, because it wasn't that he didn't want Derrick to get signed. It was just he didn't think they'd do it. He thought that he would play on the tag. They'd revisit it next year, and so on and so forth. I was steadfast from the beginning that I thought they would get a deal done. And then, like I said, on Monday, I was like, well, I guess I'm going to be wrong on this one. But I learned a valuable lesson, Ryan. It's never over until it's over.
Right. And the last 2 days here on the Rundown, Marquise and I have been talking about how it's not going to get done with Derrick Henry and the Titans after Adam Schefter tweeted early Tuesday morning that it was not looking like it would happen. And that, to me, reeks Jimmy Sexton reaching out to him and saying, we don't like where this is going. It doesn't feel like it's going to happen. And then it gets put out there. And then at the 11th hour, like you said, it gets done. And for me, 4 years, $50 million, $25.5 million guaranteed. I thought the guaranteed money was actually going to be higher than that, maybe closer to $30 million. And I can't help but think that this is a deal that's going to look good and feel good for both sides. Because when you're the Titans, now you don't enter the 2020 season, assuming they play, with this cloud hanging over them of whether or not Derrick Henry will be playing in a Titans uniform in 2021 or beyond. And you also don't have the cloud hanging over them of, okay, well, if we go into the 2021 offseason and tag him again, how is he going to feel about that? All of the goodwill that has been built up with Derrick Henry, does some of that go away if we tag them or tag him back-to-back years? And does this become closer to a Le'Veon Bell situation when he was with the Pittsburgh Steelers? And obviously them giving Derrick Henry $25.5 million guaranteed is essentially them paying him the guaranteed money of tagging him 2 years in a row plus a couple million. And to me, that is absolutely worth it. Derrick Henry earned that money. And, you know, Teron Davenport was on here yesterday saying that it wasn't going to be a good look in the locker room that if John Robinson had cut Jarrell or traded Jarrell Casey and let Logan Ryan walk and cut Delanie Walker, that all the hard work that and success that those individuals had in a Titans uniform ended up them ending up elsewhere, that someone who paid their dues and, you know, really put in all the hard work, he's the backbone of the team, and he finally gets rewarded for it. I think this is a good deal for both sides.
I agree. Before we get into the particulars of what the money looks like, let's hear from ESPN's Adam Schefter on how this went from no-go to it's a done deal.
Kevin, as you mentioned, oftentimes these deals come together at the last moment. And on Monday, these sides were not expecting this deal to get done. But last night, there were some discussions and some dialogue about a potential deal that could be a compromise for both sides. They talked all through the night, into today. And sometime early this afternoon, Derrick Henry signed off on a deal that's probably a little bit below the top paid running backs in the league, but really offers him a great deal in a day and age where the free agent running back class of 2021 has the potential to be loaded. The draft class of 2021 has the potential to be loaded. There'll be a supply, a glut of running backs. And so Derrick Henry opted for the guarantee of $25.5 million today, signing that four-year extension that gives Tennessee the ability to sign Derrick Henry and Ryan Tannehill both this offseason and retain their quarterback and running back. The Chiefs kept Patrick Mahomes and Chris Jones, and now the Titans have countered with their own answer.
John Robinson had two main jobs this offseason: keep his quarterback, keep his running back, and he has now accomplished both of those. It took a little longer than maybe we hoped or expected, but at the end of the day, he got it done. And John Robinson continues to put his stamp on his legacy and on what he's trying to build with this football team. The $25.5 million guarantee is the key in all of this, because obviously a player, you know, Floyd has taught us for years, Ryan, that a lot of the numbers that you hear really don't mean anything. It's monopoly money. That's how he puts it. But that $25.5 million, that's going to Derek, and that's the money that Derek really cares about, because he knows that no matter what happens, he's going to get that amount of money, which is a good chunk of change. I think that's good for him. Where I think this is good for the Titans is the cap hit, especially for this year, is very low. It's $6 million for this year. That's huge. So that gives them a ton of cap room to go sign somebody else, Jadeveon Clowney, if they need to do that. So they have a lot of room to work with there. So that's where it's team friendly. And after 2 years, it's not that hard to get out of this. After 3 years, it's even better that they could get out of this contract, which 3 years is significant because that matches up with Ryan Tannehill, that they could get out of Ryan Tannehill's deal around that time. We all are hoping that this is a long run and they don't have to do that, but as a team, as a general manager, you do have to build in some outs, just like a player would, just in case things go south. So I love this deal. I think it is probably, as Adam Schefter put it, not exactly what Derrick Henry wanted. But leading us into the next part of this, with everything going on in our world with the pandemic and the uncertainty of, okay, is the NFL going to start on time? Are they going to play a full season? Are they going to have any fans in the stands at all? You know, what are the economics going to look like? I don't think Derek, I think Derek had to, and this is something Darren has brought up, we've talked about this, that Derek had to take a fair deal, something that was good for him, that he was going to be happy with, he wasn't going to have any regret, but he also had to look at it as, I may not get this next year, based on what happens on the field, but also really what's based on what happens off the field. So I think that the economic or the pandemic affected the economics, and that's one reason why they ended up getting this done.
Yeah, I do think that is a big factor in it actually getting done, and Derrick Henry potentially taking a considerable amount of money less than what he and Jimmy Sexton were thinking going into this offseason. And you combine that with the 2021 offseason free agent class with Dalvin Cook and Alvin Kamara and Aaron Jones, and there's other names. Todd Gurley only signed a one-year deal with Atlanta, so Todd Gurley could be a free agent next offseason, and if he has a big season with the Falcons, then he's probably looking at big money, Leonard Fournette. So if Derrick Henry in 2020 was on a one-year deal on the franchise tag and had a mediocre Derrick Henry season and wasn't as good as he was last season, then he would have cost himself a lot of money going into the 2021 offseason. So it made sense on both sides to get this done. You know, the last couple of days, Chase, it kind of felt like I was talking myself into, or trying to talk myself into, how it was an okay thing that they didn't come to a deal. But then when it started coming out yesterday around 2 o'clock that this was heading in the right direction, that they were going to beat the deadline, the Titans fan in me was so ecstatic that this was going to get done. Because, look, Derrick Henry is, I would contend, maybe the third most popular Titan of all time after what happened in the playoffs in January behind Steve and Eddie. And
yep,
Derrick Henry, look, I get the whole running back aspect of this and the fact that a lot of running backs don't work out on their second contract. But we've been saying this since really mid-April, Chase, that we both feel like Derrick Henry is still going to have a successful handful of seasons before he hits his decline, because he just doesn't have a lot of wear and tear on his on his body in the NFL or even college. I mean, he had the one monster year in his junior year at Alabama, but it's not like in his 3 years at Alabama that they made him a 300-plus carry running back, and he's only eclipsed that number with the Titans once, and he hasn't really been a true number one running back for the Titans since the middle of the 2018 season. So Derrick Henry, I'm so glad to see him locked up long term.
Yeah, I agree with that. Ben on our text line, 615-737-1025, your reaction to Derrick Henry signing a long-term deal with the Tennessee Titans. He did ask that, you know, can the Titans still afford Jadeveon Clowney? What's the cap situation like? They were already in good shape. Because keep in mind, $10 million was already applied towards the salary cap with the franchise tag number, because he had signed that. So you have to keep that in mind, that whatever the cap number was, that's what you really had, because he had already signed the franchise tender. It actually now gets better because of the way the contract is constructed. The cap hit's only $6 million this year. So the Titans have north of $23 million in cap space right now today. So, yes, they can afford Jadeveon Clowney because, number one, he's not going to get his $20 million that you know was out there way long ago. But if it's maybe John Robinson was hesitant on 15, maybe now you get him in on a physical and you're like, okay, I could do that. I could do that and I could still be okay. $23.645 million in cap space for the Titans right now. So they're in very good shape when it comes to the salary cap, based on the moves that they made. And this is all from overthecap.com. And that's with, you know, almost $11 million in dead cap money that are in dead money on the cap that they have. So good on John Robinson. He is much better in Vin Marino. You got to give Vin Marino some credit. They are much better at math than I am.
About 300,000 million people are better at math than you are, Chase.
Yes.
I just made up a number, but that number is accurate when it comes to comparing their math skills to you.
Yeah, well, I admit what I'm good at, and I admit what I'm bad at. I'm great at hosting a radio show. I'm bad at math. So there you go.
There you
How
go.
How about that? That's okay. It's okay for me to admit that. But I'll ask this question, and I want participation. Let's get audience participation on this question. What is the bigger risk, or who is the bigger risk for the Tennessee Titans? Is it Ryan Tannehill or is it Derrick Henry? 615-737-1025. We will discuss that when we come back here on The Rundown, ESPN 1025 The Game.
I'm really excited for Derrick Henry. I really think that he deserved a contract. I thought that he probably should have got a little bit more. But given the state of running backs and how they value the running backs over the last 10 years or so, I kind of see where it's going. But when you look at, you know, the last year's playoffs, Baltimore really relied on the running game. San Francisco relied on the running game. Tennessee obviously relied on the running game. In some degree, Kansas City. But they had the phenomenal quarterback in Patrick Mahomes. So this league, in order to win in this league, you need a great deal of balance. You really need to be able to run the football effectively later in the year. And Derrick Henry was really the best running back, clearly the best running back, down the back stretch of the season, and he got compensated for doing so.
Titans legend Eddie George on ESPN Radio last night giving his reaction to Derrick Henry getting the contract. And, you know, I knew that Eddie would be excited about that from conversations that we've had with him through this entire process on Derrick getting paid. Welcome back into The Rundown here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Chase McCabe, Ryan Porth, Marquise Munson back at the Wholesale Link Studios powered by RumbleOn.com. So we asked the question, who's the bigger risk for the Tennessee Titans? Is it Derrick Henry and the contract that he just signed, or is it the quarterback, Ryan Tannehill? Now, before I give you my answer, I will say that I felt that it was necessary to get both done, because you realize that the catalyst of your offense was definitely Derrick Henry and was the running back, but he really got to shine once Ryan Tannehill took over at quarterback. So in some ways, they needed one another. I think that they worked together to make that thing work. So I wanted to see both of them back with this team, And John Robinson got that done. Now, with all that said, to answer the question, I think that Tannehill's the bigger risk. You have to look at the history. You have to look at the history of the fact that he hasn't played 16 games since 2015. Now, I understand last year is different because he started the year as the backup, so I will give you that. But his last year in Miami only played 11 games. He got hurt. 13 games before that, got hurt. He's had some good years, but they've been kind of mediocre. I understand that Miami's teams weren't great, so you have to factor that in, but I need to see it again. So to answer the question truthfully, to me, I believe Tannehill is the bigger risk, and really it's after 3 years that you can get out and it not hurt you too much, whereas Derek, and you're paying less money to a running back, it's 2 years, you can get out, and it's not going to hurt you that much. So my answer is Tannehill. Ryan, what about you?
I don't think it's really any question that it's Tannehill. The point that you make there of they're really tied to Tannehill for the next 3 years. I mean, they gave Ryan Tannehill, $62 million in fully guaranteed money and $91 million in total guarantees. The entire four-year deal was worth $118 million. And they had to do it because of what Tannehill did in a Titans uniform last year and turning around the entire season once he went under center, starting with that Chargers game in week 7. But, giving him all that money, he's simply not as proven in a Titans uniform as Derrick Henry is. And I feel so much more comfortable saying that Derrick Henry is going to be the same Derrick Henry for the next two to three years than I do saying that Ryan Tannehill is going to even come close to what he did last season in a Titans uniform for that same period of time. Because Tannehill, not only with an injury history, but also performance issues in Miami, he's kind of a wild card. Does he repeat what he did last year? I think it's certainly possible, but I also think it's possible that he could go through a 2020 season that he only plays 12 or 13 games due to injury. He's more mediocre than he was last season, and he just isn't the same quarterback. So even though that position is a lot more important within this conversation than a running back, his contract is a much bigger risk than Derrick Henry's, in my opinion.
This is a big but, what I'm about to say. But what we saw in the playoffs. Now, I think on a normal day, on a normal playoff run, your quarterback is going to have to throw for over 100 yards for two games. But because of Derrick Henry and his performances, you didn't need him to. So if you can find a little bit more of a balance with that, okay, you have Derrick, and I think he can have an even better year than he did last year, but I know that that's asking a lot. So even if it's a little bit less, he had 1,540 yards. Let's say if it's more in the 1,350 to 1,400 range, okay, you'll take that. You'll feel fine about that. And then if Tannehill can give you just a little bit more than he gave you last year, you're in good shape. But even if it's a little bit less with the other weapons, the other pieces that you have, and hopefully an even better defense with younger players continuing to develop, you're going to be in good shape. I know, but at the same time, all the stars have to align, and that's easier said than done.
I wouldn't use the playoff games as a barometer because the playoff games just felt so different from the regular season games with Tannehill under center, right? Because,
I mean...
The New England game and the Baltimore game were nothing like the first 10 games that Tannehill spent under center with the Tennessee Titans when there was a lot more balance. I mean, think of the Kansas City game. Think of the Jacksonville game. Both of those regular season games back in November where they put up 35 points against the Chiefs and they put up 42 points against the Jags. Tannehill, in those two games, completed 13 passes against the Chiefs and 14 passes against the Jags through a combined 4 touchdowns and no picks. He was extremely efficient within those games. And also within those games, Derrick Henry ran wild. And right. Derrick Henry, because Ryan Tannehill was very successful in those two games, and you had to respect Ryan Tannehill. That opened up some running lanes for Derrick Henry in those games, and vice versa. And Henry against the Chiefs on November 10th had 188 yards and two touchdowns. Against the Jags 2 weeks later, 159 yards and two touchdowns. So I think those are the examples that Arthur Smith wants to follow and not really go with the playoff games.
No, I agree with that. And you just hit on a point that I don't even know if you hit on. But the reason that they signed Ryan Tannehill wasn't because and that they had no choice, that they needed to do it. It wasn't because he just lit it up, and we all agree with that. It was because, really, truthfully, outside of a couple of just flashes in the pan, since Steve McNair, they have not been able to find consistent quarterback play.
Right.
This was the most consistent that it's been in a very long time. Marcus had flashes. There were times where you're like, all right, here you go. He's going to get it, but then he gets hurt. Or, something just changes and he's making mistakes. He never could get it on a consistent level. And I know that that could be a concern here because of what happened in Miami. But they saw something that worked. It fit the offensive coordinator. The offensive coordinator and Arthur Smith was able to be a little more dynamic. He was able to trust his quarterback, which is something that they haven't been able to do in a while. And so that's kind of what led them down that road and led them to, hey, it's safe. He takes care of us. He takes care of the ball. And the word that you use, he is efficient. And we know we have the bell cow behind him.
I mean, you bring up the Titans quarterback history. I would contend that 10-game stretch for Ryan Tannehill once he went under center was better than most of Steve McNair's time as quarterback. As just a pure quarterback.
Pure quarterback, agree with you.
I mean, Ryan Tannehill, that was some of the best quarterback play we have ever seen out of anybody in a Titans uniform, including McNair, including Vince Young, including the disaster that was Jake Locker and Marcus Mariota. I mean, he was playing at – I mean, look, he was the highest-rated passer in the National Football League last year.
Yeah.
And I know Steve McNair was too back in his co-MVP season in 2003. His quarterback rating that season was 100.4. Ryan Tannehill's rating was 117.5. I mean, that's a pretty big difference. Tannehill's efficiency was next level. So I do agree that Tannehill, that stretch, is as good of quarterback play that we've seen since McNair, but a lot of it was better than McNair.
Yeah, and I just for reference, I just looked up 2008, which was, we know, the year they – started off 10-0, get beat by Baltimore. Kerry Collins was the quarterback for that entire season. He took over for Vince in the first game. I mean, he only completed 58% of his passes and a little over 2,600 yards, 12 touchdowns. So you didn't really need him to do that much because you had Chris Johnson. You had just an absolutely stout defense. Which this team has been built on a lot. So you didn't need him to be just a lights-out quarterback. Just like the Titans now don't necessarily need Tannehill to do that, even though, as you just mentioned, that stretch of games, I mean, he did. He did exactly what he needed to do for this team to help them win, to complement everything else that they have. So,
But what I would add to that, though, is that they are going to need – this Titans team is going to need the offense to be clicking at a similar rate this season because of all the questions on defense. I mean, you lose Casey, you lose Ryan, you're mm-hmm. expecting young players to take the next step in their careers. And for the first time, I would think, going into a season, there are less questions on offense than there are on defense.
I'd agree with that.
For the first time in a long time with the Titans team.
I'd agree with that. But I think the hope is that Jeffrey Simmons takes a huge step, which is asking a lot for a second-year player. Landry continues his development. Evans, the same thing. I mean, those guys are – you're really going to – I mean, now that Casey and Logan Ryan are gone, you're going to turn to those guys and go, okay, this is your room now. You guys and Byard, this is you guys. Time for you to step up, lead by example. And I have no doubt that they're going to do that. Now, to me, adding another pass rusher, Clowney, whoever, that's going to only make it better. But And then you're asking a lot of Vic Beasley. I mean, Vic Beasley is a huge roll of the dice. I think we like it. A lot of people that I've talked to, they like the signing, but they don't know exactly what it's going to be. You like the situation that he's walking into, working with Vrabel and others. So I hope that works out, but it may not. So you're right, because there are a lot of questions. There are a lot of questions that could be answered right away, and you go, okay, I feel really good about this. Or it could be, I'm nervous. Going to need that offense to really do a lot, and I don't know if they're up for it.
And don't ignore the loss of Dean Pease.
No, absolutely not. Because now this is the big time for Mike Vrabel. He's done a pretty good job as a head coach, but now he has to be a head coach and he has to run a defense. And I know that he has help, and it still may not be him calling the plays, but this is going to be his baby, and he has to take everything that he's learned over the years and apply it and hope that it works, because he's only been a coordinator for 1 year.
Mm-hmm.
So, you're right. This is the first time in a long time that the defense has more question marks than that of the offense with the Tennessee Titans. So we mentioned Jadeveon Clowney with the cap room that we talked about earlier. Should he be the next move on the checklist? Because there's really nothing left except for pass rush, in my opinion. We'll discuss that when we come back here on The Rundown, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Get two tickets for two parks for the price of one. That's two tickets for the price of one for Beach Bend and Splash Lagoon Water Park on sale now. Go to thegamenashville.com and click on the Beach Bend Buy One, Get One Free ad to purchase your tickets now for only $37.99. Welcome back into The Rundown. Chase McKay, Rowdy Ryan Porth, and Marquise Munson hanging out with you, talking Derrick Henry. And we have a poll up right now at 102.5 The Game on Twitter. Who do you feel got the better end of the Derrick Henry contract to remain with the Titans long term? 4 years, $50 million, 25.5 guaranteed. Do you think it's Derrick Henry, the Titans, or is it a win-win? 78% of you right now say it is a win-win. Only 6% say Derrick Henry, 16% say the Titans. So a vast majority saying it's a win-win, and I tend to agree and believe that it's good for both sides that they were able to get this done. It's team-friendly, and Derek got paid. So you have to feel good about that. So what is next on the checklist for general manager John Robinson? He's taking care of the quarterback, okay? He's taking care of the running back. He's gone through the draft, and I like the draft class. Obviously, you have to see how that pans out, but you got that. Pass rush, though, that's the one. That's the one that you go, okay, you got Vic Beasley, but what is Vic Beasley? Is Vic Beasley going to solve all your problems? I don't think so. You have $23.6 million in cap space now after trading Jarrell Casey this offseason. And by the way, you didn't really replace him. I know people say, well, Jeffrey Simmons is his replacement. Okay, who's replacing Jeffrey Simmons? You still didn't really fill that void. So now what do you do? Jadeveon Clowney's still out there, and I know that continues to be a conversation because you can't bring him in for a workout and all that. Well, training camp is scheduled to open in a couple of weeks. I would think by then you're going to be able to bring him in for a workout. I would have him in on day one and get that done because he's the best player available. He's going to fit your scheme. Oh, and by the way, he knows the division and he knows Vrabel. That's what I think should be next.
I would tend to agree with you, and my mindset now that the Derrick Henry contract is only $6 million against the cap has kind of changed on Jadeveon Clowney, because there aren't many more pieces that you would think that John Robinson has to go out and get for this roster. Yes, they could use probably another veteran receiver in the mix so that Khalif Raymond isn't your fourth receiver, but I wouldn't expect that individual to cost that much against the salary cap. So, you know, my line in the sand on Jadeveon Clowney since late March has been $13 million a year on a one-year deal. If it's 1 year, $13 million, sign me up. Anything more, I'm gonna be cautious. But the fact that they have all that cap space, if you really want Jadeveon Clowney, like this comes down to how much Mike Vrabel thinks Clowney's going to fit in, considering that he has a lot of experience with Clowney in his time in Houston. Do you go to 15 or 16 on a one-year deal just to get him here, even though that might be a little high for him?
Yes, and here's why. If we were talking about the Predators, let's just keep this close to home. If we were talking about the Predators right now, and they had a ton of cap space, which I would say $23 million in the NFL is a ton of cap space right now. Agree?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So if we're talking about the Predators, then you know how the league works, that you want to keep some wiggle room because you're going to make moves throughout the season. You're going to have a trade deadline where you're going to be active, and depending on where your team is. So you want to have some space that you can move around. In the NFL, while there have been more trades, we have seen more trades over the last few years at the deadline. I do understand that. $23 million is a lot. You can afford to maybe overpay a little bit and still have room to work with if you wanted to add or move around. You can do that. So that's why I think this is important. I agree with you. $13 million 1 year would be fantastic. But I don't think Clowney is going to take that, especially that when he looks and he knows what you and I know. He knows the space they have. He knows that they could afford 15 or 16. So his agents are going to do their job and say, oh, you got room. It's not going to kill you. You could pay a little bit more. So I think they will. I would do it is what I'm saying. I don't know what they're going to do, but I would do it. If I'm them, because you have the room and it's not going to kill you. And if he just absolutely lights it up for a year and then goes somewhere else, okay, you got him for a year.
Mm-hmm.
He did what you needed to do, and it gave you time to continue to develop those young players behind him.
In a year where the AFC South should be yours, you can make cases for the Texans and the Colts to win the division as well, but the AFC South in 2020 should be the Tennessee Titans to lose. And if you go out and you spend maybe an extra million or two than you're comfortable with to go get Clowney, and it all makes sense and it all fits within the plan, I don't see why you wouldn't do that.
I agree. I don't see why you wouldn't do it either, because you're in a – the question we've been asking for weeks, we know, all right, in whatever order, but 1-2 in the AFC, Baltimore, Kansas City. Some might put Baltimore, then Kansas City. Some might say Kansas City, then Baltimore. It doesn't matter. They're 1-2 in some order. What team is 3? There is not a definitive answer for that.
Completely up for grabs.
It is up for grabs. Why can't the Tennessee Titans be 3? They're not. I'm not saying they are yet. They have to go grab that. But you have to put yourself in a position to do that. I mean, you beat Baltimore in the playoffs. So you did that. Your game plan worked. You hung tough for a half, or most of a half, in Kansas City. And then they just overpowered you, because that's what they do. So you can be in position to be number 3 to start the year, and that's a great place to be. You don't have to be at the top of the heap right now, but you have to work with what you have, for one. So let's see what this roster looks like at a training camp, which is going to be a weird training camp. Who knows what it's going to be, if it's going to be able to start on time, if they all report and then all of a sudden there's a breakout and they got to stop. You have to deal with those questions. But you're in a position where right away you can take a stranglehold on this division and put yourself in position to be the third best team in the conference.
I don't see how anything that you just said could be wrong, because there's no definitive number 3. And I think a lot of people around the league would look at the Titans and say, you know what, especially if they get Clowney, they could almost distance themselves as as a number 3. You know, one, the top tier, obviously, like you said, Chiefs, Ravens. The second tier is kind of jumbled, but you add Clowney to the mix, I think there would be people out there that say, you know what, the definitive third best team in the AFC would be the Titans, and then everybody else.
Because you know what people don't want to do, and they may not admit it, but I will. Right now, by default, if you look at the AFC, the best, I guess, if I put you in a corner and say, hey, you have to tell me a team that would be your number 3, some people go, okay, I guess it's Buffalo. Nobody wants to do that. Nobody wants to say, yes, the Buffalo Bills are the third best team in the AFC, and I'm going to stand by that. Nobody wants to do that because they don't believe it.
They don't want to do it because Josh. They don't want to put a team that is quarterbacked by Josh Allen as the third best team in a conference.
Right. Exactly. Because he's good enough. But I don't. Mm-hmm. I'm one of those with Buffalo. I just don't believe in him. I don't. And part of that is, I'm not writing off New England until they're dead and buried and gone and Bill Belichick isn't coaching anymore, because history has told me not to do that. I understand Tom Brady's not there anymore, but they got Cam Newton now, so who knows what he's going to do with Cam Newton.
I'm not writing them off, but I don't feel like their ceiling is an 11 or 12 win season.
You may just be right.
They have some good defensive players, but they even lost a lot in the offseason.
They did.
Even more than just Tom Brady. So, you know, I don't trust Buffalo. I don't trust New England. I don't trust Pittsburgh because Big Ben can't stay healthy. I don't trust really anyone in the AFC West beyond Kansas City. I don't trust the Colts because of Old Man Rivers. I don't trust the Texans because of Bill O'Bonehead. So, process of elimination leads you to the Titans. You sign Clowney. And I think the Titans are separating themselves as the third best team in the AFC.
I don't know if you do this, but I do this. A lot of times before an NFL season, I identify my sure things. Like, this is like placing a bet. Like, okay, my locks. Kansas City, Baltimore, those are my locks in the AFC. But a lot of times, there's a team that maybe they weren't very good the year before, for whatever reason, if it's injuries. San Francisco is probably the best example of that from last year. That, okay, the year before they weren't very good, but I think they're going to be pretty good now that Jimmy G's healthy. And that turned out to be correct. They went to the Super Bowl. But in the AFC, outside of the Titans, there's not a team that I can really do that with. Like, I Raiders? Eh. Sorry, Marquise. Chargers? Nope. Broncos? No.
No.
Buffalo, there's not a team. That's what I'm saying.
Right.
There's not another team that you can go, you know what? I think that they will be better. I mean, I'm not even like the closest to that. And this is a stretch by a mile, but the closest to that would be Pittsburgh or Cleveland. And from what you just said, I don't really believe in Pittsburgh because I think Ben's going to get hurt by week three or four anyway. And Cleveland's Cleveland.
I mean, I think you could also say New England or Buffalo because one of them is going to win the division. It's not going to be Miami New York.
That's true.
So,
but Miami, I think Miami will be better, especially if Tua is good to go and plays, but they're not there yet.
They're
a year or two away. But I think they'll be good. I think we'll be talking about Miami soon, just not yet.
Probably in 2021 or beyond.
Yeah. No. But so that right there is even more reason. If Clowney's available and he'll take 16, then you go, let's do it. Let's go. Let's chase it. Let's see what we can do. We got to the AFC title game last year. Two more wins. I mean, how many times did we say that with the Preds? Two wins away. That's what the Titans were. So that's the goal. So I would do it. $16 million. Sign me up. You got the cap space to do it. And I'm glad that you've changed your mind now because of yesterday's event. So you feel a little bit better about it.
I feel like there's just more wiggle room to do it now. Like, the uncertainty around Derrick Henry kind of, for me, drew that line in the sand of $13 million. But now that the cap hit for Henry in 2020 is going to be $6 million, it's like, okay, well, now you can afford to give a million or two extra to Clowney just to get him in a Titans uniform.
On the other side, we're going to get to Preds and training camp, but I do want to hit on a signing that did not happen yesterday, and if we were surprised by that. We'll do that when we return here on The Rundown, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Welcome back into The Rundown, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Chase McCabe, Ryan Porth, Marquise Munson here with you, excited about Derrick Henry signing his long-term deal. But one fan base, I want to know how they're feeling today, because a deal that did not get done is that of my Cowboys. Dak Prescott, the quarterback of the Dallas Cowboys, did not get a long-term deal done. He will play on the franchise tag this year. And I know that I've read Twitter and his brother is upset about it, but I'm going to just be honest with you. They weren't going to do it. I really didn't think they would at this point. I did kind of lose hope as it went down the stretch that they wouldn't get a deal done, and they didn't. I know there were reports. I was watching NFL Live that Schefter was reporting that they had kind of picked up some talks at the last minute, but it just never went anywhere. But were you surprised that they didn't get this deal done?
No, because it just kind of felt that way. But also, if I'm the Dallas Cowboys, I don't know how willing I would be to go into just a one-year deal for Dak Prescott and kind of leave things up to him beyond 2020. Look, Dak had a great 2019. This offense should be really stinking good in 2020, which means his price tag will probably only go up unless he suffers an injury. So if I'm the Cowboys, I don't know why they wouldn't have just got it done now instead of trying to see what he can do in another season, because I mean, odds are it's going to be a good-looking offense in 2020. So I question the Cowboys' approach on this one.
Oh, I do too. Because Jerry Jones and Stephen Jones they've been handing out money like candy to Zeke and other players, Amari Cooper. You know, they got all that done, but the most important position on the team, they couldn't figure that out. And like you said, Dak had a tremendous year last year. People want to say that Zeke was down, which to his standards he was, but Zeke was still pretty good. You hope that there'd be a little bit of a bounce back, or, you know, he continues to play at the level that he did last year and then, you know, complements what Dak does. But if Dak has an even better year, then that price tag is going to go up. So why not just take care of it? But they didn't. So Jerry knows, but we'll see. This could get, because if they don't, like, if they go through this season, he has a better year, and then they get to the negotiating table and they still don't get it done, and they try to do a Cousins and tag him again, that it's going to get ugly. It just is. It's going to get ugly between these sides, and that's not good. That's not what they want, because for the first time in a long time, they can look at both sides of the ball and say, you know what, we have a shot here. The NFC is obviously pretty good with a lot of strong teams in that league, but they have a really good shot at it and should win their division. So they need to figure out how to make Dak happy and get this done, but they got to wait a year now. So there you go. Preds training camp, 3 days into that. We've enjoyed being there for the last 3 days. It's the first time in the home studio this week. I've been there. I'll give you my observations, but from afar, Ryan, and people you've talked to, what's been your takeaways over 3 days?
Well, you know, the fact that they ramped it up the last couple days is good. You know, day one kind of felt like not easing in because it was a long, good practice, but the intensity ramping up in the last couple days is good to see. I mean, I'll go back to what I've been saying on Preds Insiders this week on Monday and Wednesday, and that is the fact that the Jofa line is together, and John Hines is seeing what that line can do and maybe rekindle some of that magic and that chemistry that they had really before the 2019 postseason, for me is the biggest takeaway and one of the now emerging storylines out of training camp, especially if they keep those three together into the exhibition game against Dallas 2 weeks from today, and into the qualifying round 2.5 weeks from now. You know, the margin for error is so small when you're going through a training camp and then, bam, it's playoffs. You have to trust that the combinations that you put together on defense and the lines that you put together on offense are going to click. And we all know Forsberg, Johansson, Arvidsson in the past has clicked better than any other line in Nashville Predators history. So I would say that's been my biggest takeaway, that John Hines wasted no time in putting those three together to see what they might be able to offer.
Yeah, and I think that kind of leads me into my keys of things that I have seen. Number one, Ryan Johansson looks like more like Ryan Johansson. I get it, it's only a practice, but he's had some breakaways. He's had some good feeds to his fellow line mates on the Jofa line. So you can tell that there's something different about him. And the second part, and I know a lot of people have noticed this, Victor Arvidsson looks healthy. I mean, for the first time since that hit, he looks healthy. That's huge. And so I think that that all factored in. John Hines realized that right away, and he said, okay, we're going to put these guys back together and see what happens. We haven't seen it in a game yet. You got to see it against Dallas in the exhibition game, then game one against Arizona. Things could change, and you have to be willing to change. But early returns are, if you have Ryan Johansson closer to the Ryan Johansson we all know, and that is feeding the puck to Forsberg or to Arvidsson, that's a good thing. And if Arvidsson is healthy and not skittish like he was when he came back from the injury, and he's able to make the moves that we all know, that's going to be good. And Philip Forsberg just needs to be Philip Forsberg. So I agree with that on the Jofa line. I have liked that. In the way too early returns on goaltender, I would give the edge to Pekka. I think Pekka has looked dialed in. He's stopping some shots that he should be stopping. There's, you know, not a ton of softies that I have seen. And I can't sit there and just stare at him like, you know, some of the other media can, because obviously we're doing the show. But I have noticed on the other end with UC that there have been some that he was making those saves before the break, and now he's just trying to find his timing again. Again, way too early returns on goaltender, so let's just take that for what it is.
It's going to be tricky for John Hines to make that decision based on practices. You know,
yes.
I asked him that question yesterday in the media availability of how do you go about evaluating Rinne and Saros compared to normal circumstances when you're basically going off practices and scrimmages and one exhibition game. And he kind of danced around it, made mention of some of the little things that he's looking for within that. But at the end of the day, I feel like he's just going to go with a gut decision, because in a practice, in scrimmages, in one exhibition game, I can't see one goaltender separating himself more, you know, clearly more than the other in a 2.5 week stretch. So I think he's just going to be going with a gut decision, maybe with practices factoring into that gut decision, and just rolling the dice with Pekka Rinne or UC Saros, and, you know, just kind of hoping that whichever one he goes with, it's the right call.
Do you agree with that? I heard Adam Vingan say this the other day, I believe when he was with Jared, because he was on with us and then he was on with Jared for an hour. But do you believe that his statement that it is easier to go from UC Saros to Pekka Rinne than it would be to go from Pekka Rinne to UC Saros?
I think there is something there, because you've got a motivated Pekka Rinne waiting in the wings if you don't like what you see out of UC Saros. Kind of in the same realm as when the Washington Capitals in the 2018 postseason didn't like what they were seeing from Braden Holtby late in the season. They were liking what they were seeing out of Philip Grubauer. They start Grubauer in the first two games, and he gets lit up like a Christmas tree against the Blue Jackets. They switch to Holtby, and they go on to win the Cup. You know, it's not an apples-to-apples comparison, but, I mean, it's pretty close. I mean, Grubauer in Washington looked like he was going to be the next starter there if he were to emerge. It didn't happen. He ends up in Colorado. But they had a motivated Holtby waiting in the wings. If you go to Pekka Rinne first and he gets lit up, then you're going to someone who has never started a playoff game and just hoping that UC Saros can save your bacon at that point. So
you have 10 seconds to answer this question.
Okay.
But the third defensive pairing, Tenorti and Holzer, is what – I mean, we've seen Hamus roll in and out some, but – do you think they go Tenorti and Holzer, which is what it was at the break because Hamus was hurt, or do they go back to Hamus and it's Tenorti and Hamus?
I think they go based off matchup against the Coyotes. The Coyotes are a quick team. Holzer is not a quick defenseman. Really, none of the four are, but I would go with Tenorti and Weber.
Tenorti and Weber is the answer. Okay, good job. It's good to be back together. I'm going to, you know, take tomorrow off because I'm going to be at the arena, and then I'm going to take all next week off. So we'll do it again sometime.
Sometime. who knows when?
Yeah, who knows when? That's going to do it for the rundown, but stick around. Darren Donick and Chase, that's next. ESPN 102.5 The Game.